Welcome in to Locked On Nets. On today's show, Josh and myself will discuss the NBA Finals. We'll break down games 1 and 2 and look ahead to the rest of the series. Plus, we'll look at some of the draft prospects that the Nets could be looking at with their picks in the upcoming NBA draft. All that and more on Locked On Nets.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Welcome back to another edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. I am your host, Josh Bass. We are brought to you by the Himalaya Podcast Network, the place to get every podcast. It is our favorite place to customize your playlists. Really great content on Himalaya, has everything you'd want from a podcast aggregator. And joining me, my man, got to see him this weekend. He watched the finals at my apartment with friend of the podcast, Gavin Shaw, and my roommates, and we all had a grand old time. It's Marcus Barahal. Marcus, what's good, man?
Josh, good to virtually see you. It was great to see you in person also. We also hung out at Prospect Park a little bit earlier in the day, so we had a full weekend of hanging out, and it's good to be back on the pod with you.
Embracing our Brooklyn roots, we actually made the pilgrimage from Manhattan to Brooklyn, past Barclays on the way, of course, paid homage to our favorite arena.
You really wanted to get out of the subway when we were at the Barclays stop. You were eager, I could tell. You're just like chomping at the bit.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to go and like kind of kiss my hand to it.
I feel like homage.
I have to every time I pass by Barclays. Unfortunately, the Nets are not playing basketball anymore, as you very well know. Maybe they will be next year, depending on what happens in free agency and the draft. We'll get into the draft a little bit more in our next segment, kind of breaking down some guys that we think the Nets could be interested in, whether it be at the 17 range or maybe even if they were to trade up. And then over the next week or two, we'll break down more of guys we could see them taking a flyer on with their other picks. But Marcus, the finals are going on. It's 1-1 between the Raptors and Warriors. It's been a really exciting two games. You know, I know some people are kind of bemoaning that there's not the best players playing just because KD's out. Now Klay Thompson's banged up. Kawhi's clearly not 100%. Iguodala's banged up. Pretty much everyone that you want to see on the court.
OG Anunoby,
if you're one Jonathan Sharks, has some ailment. But I've been really entertained by this series.
Yeah, me too. I mean, both games have been single digit, so that obviously speaks to like the level of balance between the teams. The Raptors, one game won by 9, and then the Warriors took the second game by 5. And it's been super interesting because in game 1, it felt like the Raptors were kind of in control the whole time, even though it was a close-ish game. But then in game 2, it seemed like that was going to be the case again, but the Warriors went on that massive run, and then Klay Thompson's injury obviously happened, and from there things kind of tipped back the other way. And so we haven't really seen these two teams like both operating at their highest level at the same time. Like the Raptors kind of had most of their run, and when the Warriors had their run, Toronto just looked awful. And so we haven't seen that back and forth possession to possession necessarily, but we've seen it within games and within runs. And so I think that it's going to be a competitive series. I don't think it'll end in 5, which is, I think, what some people thought before the series. You and I think, both said 6, but I think 1-1, Golden State, you would think, has the edge now that they have home court, but if Klay has to miss Game 3, I know KD was already announced that he's out, so I don't know, they're kind of running out of guys, and it's putting a lot of pressure on guys like Sean Livingston, and now with Looney being out also, DeMarcus Cousins.
Yeah, no, absolutely, and Cousins, it's funny because like after game 1 of the series, people were saying, oh, he's just not going to have a role. Game 2 played pretty well and really made a big impact with his passing. And then now it's pretty much he's going to be a huge part of the series for them because they're not going to go back to Bogut, really. Looney's out for the series with his collarbone injury. So now like they're really having to rely on Boogie, not just to play big minutes, but also probably to create a lot of shots for them, especially when Curry is getting a few minutes of rest. So I think it'll be interesting to see. And yeah, the Warriors were just, it was just prime, like what you think of in this Golden State run when they had that 18-0 spurt against the Raptors, just open threes, getting easy layups and dunks off of back cuts. Just kind of their movement, even without some of these top guys, it's not going to be as effective if you're chasing, whoever, like not even Quinn Cook, because Quinn Cook because Quinn Cook was on absolute fire, but it's not going to be as effective if you're chasing like Sean Livingston around versus Klay Thompson. But even still, the movement they have, they're so disciplined with it, they can still create open baskets even if it's not a world-class guy running off a screen.
Yeah, and that run that you mentioned, obviously the big run was in the third quarter, but it kind of started at the end of the second where Toronto was up by around 10 or so, and it felt like a tipping point where they could have either pushed it to like 15-plus or the Warriors could have cut it before halftime, and they wound up getting it down to 5, which made it a lot more manageable, and then obviously that big surge kind of pushed them ahead. And yeah, they kind of built a lot of breathing room and then didn't really score down the stretch outside of that big Iguodala shot, which really makes you question going forward, like if Klay isn't 100%, like where does their offense come from? They're kind of really relying on Steph to do probably too much.
Yeah, no, it's, I think it's a good point. And like, I don't know, that Iguodala shot was just so crazy because he shot it so early. And
I get insane.
It was wide open, but like if I'm him, I'm waiting like 3 or 4 seconds and then shooting.
Or at least like driving in from there.
Yeah, because you only needed a two-pointer, because if you hit that, then it's already a two-position game. So it's basically, even if a three-pointer gives you more expected value than a two-pointer in that scenario, it's more about just kind of what's the highest percentage is to hit any shot.
That's exactly what people like get confused about analytics sometimes, where it's like, yes, a certain shot might have like a higher expected value. Like a corner three is obviously, on average, the best shot you can take. Mm-hmm. But if you don't need 3 points, then there's no real point in taking it.
Right, exactly. No, it gives you there's less variance there, which is more important in that scenario, just to get a bucket. But, you know, credit to Iggy. I think he's really had some huge moments these playoffs, and I think cemented himself for me as a Hall of Famer. But on the Raptors side, Marcus, I want to give you a second, because you are the biggest Spicy P Pascal Siakam fan I know. So, like, take a moment to kind of live in his moment, so to speak, after his amazing game one where he dropped 32 points. And was just like ridiculously efficient. I want you to kind of boast for Pascal and getting in on the ground floor for him.
Yeah, I mean, I've loved Siakam since before last season, so like almost 2 years now with my guy. From watching him in like preseason games when I was working at the NBA last year, and yeah, this was like the perfect Siakam game where he hit a couple threes. I think they were actually both above the break, which is rare for him. And he was just, he had his spin move working. He was kind of getting wherever he wanted on the floor. His passing, which is like really good for his size and especially his experience with the game. He had 5 assists. He was rebounding like crazy. 32 points, obviously, on just 17 shots. So that's like all you can ask for from him. And it really covered up a game where Kawhi Leonard didn't play his best. Kyle Lowry was meh. And Marc Gasol played well also. But it was really Siakam who made the difference in game one. And then in game two, not to bring it down on the Siakam train, but he was only 5 for 18, 12 points. And I mean, he still rebounded well. He still brought that energy, but it felt like Draymond Green obviously did a much better job of defending him and kind of limiting him, forcing him to kick it out or throw up tough shots. And yeah, he did not play as well in game two. So he's like definitely a big swing guy in this series.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I feel like the Raptors really need a second player that can score consistently, especially with Kawhi not being at full strength. He's just not going to be able to get buckets like he has been in past series with the way his health is and the way the Warriors play. So they really need someone to step up and be a consistent second guy. And it doesn't need to necessarily be the same guy every night, but Siakam's the best bet on any given night to score an efficient 18 to 22 points.
Yeah, and like you said, they have a lot of guys. Siakam, Gasol, Kyle Lowry, even Danny Green can get hot from three. Fred VanVleet has played really well. Honestly, anyone in their eight-man rotation, like Norm Powell, Serge Ibaka, those guys are all capable. It's just a matter of finding guys who can pop. And then Kawhi obviously has to do his part. He was 8 for 20, which is like fine, but he did score 34 points because he got to the line 16 times and made every shot, which is really tough. He had 5 offensive rebounds. It felt like he was just kind of rocking guys to sleep in the post and then doing that like little rip-through move to get the Warriors in foul trouble. And there was like a lot of complaining on Twitter that I saw that the Raptors were kind of getting hosed by the whistle a little bit. But I don't know. I mean, they shot more free throws. Yeah. They drew more fouls. So I don't think it was like a big deal, personally.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree with that.
I'm rooting for them, so I don't know.
Yeah, which makes me annoyed. But like, I don't know. So I'm rooting for the Warriors in this series, like no bones about it. But I just get so much like just grief from people that I am rooting for the Warriors, and I appreciate their greatness, and I like the Raptors a lot also. If they're playing the Rockets or if they're playing someone else in the finals, I'd definitely be rooting for them. But you know what? The Nets have had some rivalry with the Raptors in these past few years, dating back to kind of when that Kyle Lowry, DeRozan team first became good. So I feel warranted in my rooting for the Warriors in this series, at least.
Yeah, a lot of my Nets fan friends like hate the Raptors, mostly I think because of Masai's comment that one time, the fuck Brooklyn thing.
Yeah, that wasn't great. That wasn't great of him. We don't appreciate that because we love Brooklyn. We're going to take a break here, and then coming up, we will do some draft preview, talking a bit about some guys the Nets could be interested in targeting in the draft, which is coming up in just a few weeks. Draft talk. Let's do it. The NBA draft is coming up in a couple weeks, June 20th. I will actually be in Denver that day for a little vacation. I'll be doing some hiking, going to see a couple shows at Red Rocks, if anyone's going to be there for the Humphreys McGee concert, which I don't know if we have any overlap whatsoever in listenership and Humphreys fans or the jam band community whatsoever, but just let me know and we can meet up. But it's ironic, I'll be out in Denver because the Nets have the Nuggets pick, the 27th pick in the draft, to go along with their own first rounder, number 17, and then the Knicks second rounder, which is 31, actually a really nice asset, so I'm pretty hyped up about that. Marcus and I are going to be breaking down a couple of people we think could be interesting for the Nets with their 17th pick. Marcus, a guy I know that you're pretty high on is Cam Johnson, who went to Pitt, transferred to UNC, and is a really interesting 3-and-D wing guy, kind of prototypical in that archetype. But what do you like about Cam? Because I'm not super high on him for the Nets specifically, but you seem to like him.
Yeah, just quickly before I get into it, I always forget that you like jam bands, and it's like very Love refreshing it. Every time I hear it. Sorry, but back to basketball.
I aim to refresh.
Thank you. Yeah, I like Cam Johnson. I think he's just fits into like a mold of what I like in a player. Like in the last draft, I really liked Chandler Hutchison from Boise State, who like didn't really do much in his rookie year for the Bulls. But
terrible.
Yeah, but I really liked him going into the draft. I like the guys who look like they could maybe develop into like a Tobias Harris type. And what I saw from Cam Johnson at UNC, obviously he's older, he was a senior, so he's already 23, which is not good, but he did average about 17 points per game on a 62% effective field goal percentage in his senior year. He can like clearly score the ball, and I think that with his size, he's, like you said, I think he's like 6'8", he's got like a 6'10 wingspan. I think that he has the ability to, like, at worst, be competent defensively, and I think that he can kind of fill a spot that the Nets lack, like we've talked about, which is that 3-4 guy who can kind of create a shot, who can hit open jumpers, and who can defend at a reasonable level. Obviously, assuming that he's picked by the Nets at, like, 17, you're not expecting a guy who's going to be, like, an all-star, and I think that he's someone who you know will be solid, and, like, if the team is looking to just build off what they did last year and add a guy who I think has a high floor, then I think he's a solid pick.
Yeah. I mean, I like Cam Johnson. I just don't think he's the best fit for the Nets because my kind of thesis with the Nets for these draft picks right now is to go with someone who has a ton of upside and might not ever get there. But
even still
time,
with the team like shooting for the playoffs seemingly next year.
Yes, absolutely. Because they're not going to, they need people to elevate their kind of stature, or else they're going to be a first-round exit, unless they miraculously get KD or Kawhi or someone else. Like, if you just take this core and add a role player here, a role player there, they could maybe get to the second round, or if everything breaks right, the conference finals.
Does that change for you if like the Nets feel confident that they are getting someone of that level and that maybe they need more of like a solid guy, like a ready-now kind of guy?
If they knew KD was coming, then yes, I think Cam Johnson's a great pick. But like, I don't know. I feel like the Nets, like their big kind of advantage right now over the rest of the league is that their player development staff is amazing. Kenny Atkinson has shown he can do a great job with D'Angelo Russell, Caris LeVert, Spencer Dinwiddie, even Jarrett Allen, a guy that someone that people thought was a project. No one expected him to be a reasonably productive starting center within 2 years. So I think they need to take someone who has a ton of physical tools and just hope they can mold him. And obviously that guy needs to be able to play a little bit right now. You can't just say, give me the most athletic guy out there and I'll teach him how to play basketball. But kind of within the tier they're looking at, someone who has a ton of untapped physical ability and just hope you can kind of help him improve his shot, help him put him in situations to see the floor better. And with Cam Johnson, I see a guy who's a really nice role player but kind of maxed out. And just kind of with him, I think he's a really, really good three-point shooter, and that's going to translate to the next level. But he just doesn't have the scoring instincts. Even though he was a decent scorer at college, I don't think he has the innate physical tools. I don't think he has the handle. I don't think he gets to the line enough to actually be more than just a really good three-point shooter and then a solid defender at the next level, which is a really good player, but it's not someone that has the upside that I'm looking for.
Yeah, I think, just going off that, it seems like we have like a similar evaluation of him, but it's almost just that we're looking at
prioritizing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And the guy that I think is probably the opposite of Cam Johnson, someone who's not a finished product at all, is my man Sekou Doumbouya.
Woo!
Marcus.
Former future Nick.
He played at Limoges in France. He's 18 years old, only averaged a little under 7 points and 3 rebounds this year. He's someone with questionable questionable floor game, doesn't have much of a handle, pretty poor passer, but he is an insane athlete. Strong body guy that can really get up and down, kind of the perfect stretch four in this league. Decent touch as well on his 3-point shot right now, even though the percentages aren't great. And I think he's a guy, if he kind of channels his energy in the right way with the right coaching staff, can be a monster on defense and develop into a reasonably good offensive player. I think he could be someone kind of like a Paul Millsap almost, with his tools. I don't think he has the instincts that Paul Millsap has, which allows him to be just an insanely good defensive player in his peak with Atlanta because his positioning was amazing. But I think Sekou could have a huge impact just due to kind of his overall athleticism and decent skills for someone of that archetype.
Yeah, for sure. And you've obviously talked a lot about Sekou both on the pod and off the pod. And so I've kind of learned more about him. And I do like him a lot. I think that he's got a ton of potential, like you said, and he does kind of remind me of a guy we just talked about in the, when we were talking about the finals, Pascal Siakam, where he was kind of a guy who started late and learned the game as he went and just kind of picked it up and has kind of developed into an energy guy at his core, but a guy who also can play make, who can defend really well, who brings more smarts, I guess, than you would expect with like a typical, just like high energy guy. So I think that Sekou kind of fits exactly what you were talking about in terms of what you were looking for, where he's got the size and he's got the skill to be able to play right now, but he also has a really high ceiling.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And Sekou, the thing for me about him is that, people might say, oh, international guy, I don't want that. But he's not just a workout warrior. He's someone who's super aggressive in games. He just needs a way to channel that aggressiveness into more positive attributes. And he had an amazing game recently that a lot of scouts were at. I think there's zero chance he drops to 17. The Nets would have to probably trade up in the 9 to 13 range. But I'd be willing to do that with a guy like Sekou, considering that we've already talked about they're not going to be able to keep three guys from this draft on the roster, most likely, with their aspirations and free agency. But I'm pretty high on him, and I'd be willing to trade up, maybe package 17 with Jana Musa, 31 or 27, and see what's out there.
Yeah, and I think that just in terms of what he can kind of get from the Nets, like you talked about how his biggest weakness is probably that he's like a little out of control sometimes, and having the Nets coaching staff, guys like Dinwiddie and Dudley, if they both come back, are great guys to learn from in that respect. Even a guy like Damari Carroll, in terms of learning how to control his body and work on getting that rip through foul call, like those are all little crafty things that if he adds to his athleticism will make him really dangerous.
Absolutely. I completely agree with that, and I think that Nets would be a perfect situation for him. Marcus, anyone else that you want to highlight?
Oh man, there's so many guys. I mean, it's interesting because you did talk about trading up, and like there's a lot of guys in that like 8 to 13-ish range that could be really good on the Nets. Like even a guy who's been falling, like I don't think he'd fall to the Nets range, but like a guy like Cam Reddish would be crazy if he came to Brooklyn, just because obviously he had so much hype and potential. There's like kind of a low floor there, but there's also a really, really high ceiling.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I just don't think Cam's the kind of guy the Nets are interested in, much to kind of my chagrin, because he fits the mold I was talking about as someone who is insane kind of athlete and has the tools, but for someone like him, his production was just so bad that I don't know if it's ever going to come around for him, but maybe I'm just being a hypocrite. But guys, I really like Nasir Little. I think he underperformed in his 1 year at UNC, but has the physical tools in place and could be a really nice small ball four and fit well alongside Jarrett Allen. PJ Washington, I like him a lot as well, just because he's a very smart player, has a really good three-point shot. He's someone that's gotten criticized a bit, saying that he's not going to be able to play the five, just because even though he does have a 7'2 wingspan, 3 inches longer than Sekou's, just that he's not as physical and he's not a good rebounder. But for me, I think that's fine, just because even if he's, let's say, fitting next to Jarrett Allen, you have Jarrett Allen, who's a really good rim runner. PJ Washington's best strength is being able to hit the three. And then if you're playing PJ at the four, his rebounding isn't going to be as big of a weakness. And just watching him at Kentucky these last 2 years, I really liked what I saw from him. Definitely a leader, good defender, and someone who I think definitely has some untapped potential as well. He's not just kind of a guy that's getting by on like pure heart. He really is a good athlete and has a nice skill set to work with that I think can be molded even further by Kenny and co.
Yeah, I really like PJ. I think that the point you made about aggression and like energy is an interesting one, because that was kind of an area where the Nets weren't great. Like outside of Krugs, it was hard to find guys who would like crash the offensive glass and who would provide like a big spark. Ed Davis obviously did that as well. But so I think that's why Sekou, who you mentioned earlier, would be big. But PJ Washington, skill-wise, like fits in really well. And if you can maybe sign a free agent or someone who would bring that energy to complement the skill from Washington, I think that could be really good.
Yeah, no, I think it will be interesting. And like, even though this draft is pretty weak, there's a few guys kind of in the range the Nets are picking that I do like a lot. And also, when we're getting into these 27 and 31 slots, who knows, a team could really be high on one of these guys and potentially trade a pick, which could become future draft assets for the Nets. And who knows, maybe you strike gold, the team ends up being really bad that year when they thought they were going to be a playoff team, or the draft is really strong in a certain year. But I think regardless of what people say in terms of drafts being weak, strong, I think there's always gems and value to be had for the most part.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, you see it every year when you look back like 2 or 3 years at the previous drafts, like the top 10 players are never the top 10 players of that draft, you know? So there's always going to be guys to be found. And I think that the Nets with LeVert and with Allen have shown that they're like capable of finding those guys.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. I agree with that. And we will be back later on this week talking a bit more draft and getting you up to date on the latest with the finals. You can follow myself on Twitter. I'm at jmbass_. Marcus is at Marcus Barahal. The podcast account is at Locked On Nets. Please subscribe, rate, and review us. Find and download the Himalaya podcast app on the App Store or Google Play. And don't forget to follow us and our Locked On brethren and sisters. I still haven't found a word for that. When you're there, we love the Himalaya podcast app and think it is the best option on the market. And until next time, be well.
Bye.